Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, December 7th, 2017. Let It Be Us, Fostering Love. Rolf's A Lot of Fear But a Lot of Reward in Giving Kids a Home. A couple of years ago, Nikki Rolfs had a client who was having an awful day. She had called the Department of Children and Family Services on a friend, said Rolfs, a Champaign County probation officer for 18 years. The woman was distraught at the friend's neglect of her 2-year-old child, and she shared that with Rolfs, her own daughter was 2 at the time. Talking it over with her husband, a Champaign County Sheriff's deputy for 23 years, they were ready to call the DCFS investigator and tell that person they would take in the child. Of course, it doesn't work that way, but it put us on the path to licensing, said Nikki Rolfs. 2 years and 2 foster babies later, the Rolfs want to adopt the boy who is now living with them, and they want others to know the rewards of being foster parents. I always thought I might do this, said Nikki Rolfs, who worked as a daycare provider for children for more than 20 years, a job that overlapped with her work in probation. Dwayne was not so sure. When you work in law enforcement, you only see the worst, she said of her husband's initial reluctance. Dwayne Rolfs said having a zealous, child-loving spouse helped win him over. After becoming licensed, the couple took in a girl for 3 months who was ultimately sent to live with a friend of her biological family. When you take in a foster child, DCFS generally does not promote adoption, but they do ask if you can provide permanency, Nikki Rolfs said. Of course, we said yes. The possibility that the child may move on is a fact of life for foster parents. You love them for as long as God is going to let you, Nikki Rolfs observed. If you end up getting to stay, it's a nice benefit, too. Through her work as a foster parent, Nikki Rolfs got involved with Let It Be Us, an organization that promotes the adoption of foster care children. That group is holding a local workshop from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday for anyone interested in researching adopting a foster child. It will be held at CU Christian Church, 602 West Church Street, Champaign. Representatives of 3 local foster agencies will be present, DCFS, the Center for Youth and Family Solutions, and Lutheran Social Services. Also present will be a representative of Babyfold, which offers support before and after adoption. Champaign attorney Ellen Bullock, whose practice includes handling adoptions and is an adoptive mother herself, will be the keynote speaker. The event is free, and a light breakfast of bagels, fruit, and coffee will be served. Parents with children may bring them. The church is planning activities to keep them occupied. Unlike private adoption agencies, which can be quite costly, there is no cost for adopting a child from foster care. Foster parents receive a stipend from the state of Illinois to care for the children they foster. As for the Rolfses, they want to adopt the foster son who has been with them about a year. He spent his first several weeks in neonatal intensive care, followed by 6 weeks of tender loving care by Dwayne, who took paternity leave to be with him. Nikki had just gotten a work promotion that made it hard for her to take time off. Dwayne admits he wasn't sure what he was getting into, but so far their foster son is doing well. He is healthy, he's come a long way, Dwayne said. Nikki Rolfs said she understands that people fear the unknown. Both my kids came with some issues, but I think they're perfect. I do think that people think they've had a rough life. What if I get too attached? What if they take them away? I've taken care of those babies, and the outcome so far has been fantastic, she said. The couple said they felt compelled to live their faith. From the Bible, it's clear we are called to do this. For us, that's what it was. We wanted to put action to our beliefs, Dwayne said. There's a lot of reward sometime, he said. If you go, adopting through foster care, when 9 a.m. to noon Saturday, where CU Christian Church, 602 West Church Street, Champaign. Champaign Police. Accidental shooting resulted in an unpaid suspension. A Champaign police officer wasn't in the wrong when he pulled his weapon while chasing a fleeing suspect the night of June 11th. But when James Hobson lost his footing and his gun discharged, with a bullet striking Dahari Banks in the shoulder, the officer was in violation of CPD Rule 4H, which covers the carrying of firearms. That's the finding of an internal investigation which resulted in a yet-to-be-served 10-day unpaid suspension for Hobson. For not handling his weapon with due care, the officer was also assigned to corrective firearms training before being allowed to return to patrol duties, which he did on August 24th. Wednesday's news came one day after the Champaign City Council approved a $93,000 settlement with banks, releasing the city from any future claims. In August, State's Attorney Julia Reitz announced that Hobson's shooting of banks, deemed to be accidental, did not warrant any criminal charges following a review by the Champaign County Multi-Jurisdictional Investigation Team, which was led by state police. But per policy, CPD's Firearms Discharge Review Board performed its own probe afterward. That was followed by a final review by Police Chief Anthony Cobb. The results were revealed Wednesday. In an interview with WDWS, Champaign Police Deputy Chief Troy Daniels said the Firearms Discharge Review Board believes it was appropriate for Hobson to hold his weapon at that time in that he was chasing a subject through a neighborhood. That person turned toward him. He pulled his weapon. That was very appropriate to do. But when he did so, he reports that his foot slipped and he accidentally pulled the trigger of the weapon. Basically, we hold officers accountable for their weapons. We have very high standards, and when you have the weapon pulled, even when it's appropriate, you have to make sure that it only fires when you intend it to fire. Banks suffered a non-life-threatening wound after being shot by Hobson. The police attempted to pull Banks over for an alleged traffic violation the night of June 11th, a Sunday. Authorities say Banks then eluded Hobson for a few blocks before crashing into a residential garage and fleeing on foot. Hobson's pursuit ended in the 300 block of North 4th Street, and when Banks reached a fenced-in area, according to reports. At that time, Banks turned toward Hobson, who slipped on the ground, resulting in the accidental discharge of his weapon. 2 months later, Banks was charged with aggravated driving under the influence and aggravated fleeing and eluding for a separate incident that happened August 5th. That case remains unresolved, with Banks due in court early next month. A Champaign police report said an officer saw a car fail to signal a turn from Eureka Street into Willis Avenue and tried to stop it on Willis. The driver, later identified as Banks, took off, turned west onto Bradley Avenue and allegedly ran a stop sign and almost hit an MTD bus. The car kept going, allegedly running another stop sign and veering into the wrong lane of traffic, where it almost struck an oncoming car. The officer followed the car for a time before ending the pursuit out of concern for public safety. The officer later located the car and approached it on foot with his pistol drawn. The car, which came to a stop after hitting a fence between two houses, was unoccupied when the officer reached it and put it in park. Police found Banks nearby, and he admitted that he was the driver and that he had smoked cannabis before driving. The report said Banks appeared disoriented and showed signs of impairment. Police found cannabis in the car. According to the terms of the settlement, what the council approved on Tuesday night is not to be construed as an admission of liability by Champaign Police. Between December 1, 2015 and February 17, 2017, the council also signed off on settlements with four citizens who had accused twice-fired CPD officer Matt Rush of excessive force. Those totaled $570,000, $250,000 for Precious Jackson, $225,000 for Benjamin Mann, $70,000 for Kasika Seats, and $25,000 for William Brown. Election 2018, County Executive. Chamber endorses Hulton. He helped them craft proposal to create office. The Political Action Committee of the Champaign County Chamber of Commerce has endorsed Republican Gordy Hulton over Democrat Darlene Kloppel to be the county's first county executive. The unusually early announcement comes at almost 11 months before the general election set for November 6, 2018. We decided that since the chamber was such a driver for the county executive initiative in the first place, we wanted to make sure if we're going to get involved that we want as much of the election cycle as we could and to have as much impact as we possibly could, said Garrett Hill, spokesman for the Business Empowered Political Action Committee. The Chamber of Commerce, along with the County Farm Bureau, Hulton, currently the county clerk, and State Senator Chapin Republican Mahomet were the chief proponents of the county executive proposal, which was narrowly approved by voters in November 2016 by a margin of 50.26% to 49.74%. Hill said the endorsement would be worth at least a $5,000 campaign contribution to Halton. "This check is $5,000," he said. "We haven't promised any more, but we're not going to say no to more. We find this is so important that we're willing to put our name and money in the investment. County executive is the top priority. It was the chamber that put this forward. We take this very seriously." Halton, in a prepared statement, said that he was grateful for the support. "I look forward to a partnership as we engage our local job creators in the work of improving county government and improving its service and efficiency," he said. Klopel said he was disappointed but can't say I'm surprised. "I note with interest that the points mentioned in the press release should certainly be platform issues for any candidate running for county executive. How they will be addressed is the real question to be answered by voters as their race begins." Hill said the two candidates filled out a questionnaire and were interviewed separately in mid-October. "As far as the issues go, it was a pretty clear choice," Hill said. "If it were extraordinarily close, we might have waited a little longer to flesh it out. But especially with the involvement in economic development and a lot of other key issues at the county. Those include," he said, "Halton's plans to address the county's financially struggling nursing home, to create a long-term sustainable facilities maintenance plan, and for an independent county board redistricting process. But the big thing that pushes us to introduce county executive was economic development, but also the stalled issues at the county like the jail and the nursing home. We really like Gordy's vision of it," Hill said. He denied that the endorsement process favored Halton, who had worked with the chamber on the county executive plan. "I would say it was fair and square. They both turned in surveys, they both interviewed. It was up to the board to make the decision. That was the process and that's how it should go," he said. When he announced for the position in August, Halton said he would focus on three issues as county executive: fiscal responsibility, independent redistricting, and economic development. While Champaign County elects a full-time county executive next November, it will become the only the second county in Illinois with the office. As planned, with elected executive would have broad powers, including the authority to propose the county budget, make appointments, hire a staff, set county board agendas, implement the majority of county ordinances, and veto actions of the county board, although vetoes could be overwritten with a 3/5 majority. Are to vote, but only in order to break a tie on issues before the county board. Also Wednesday, Hill said the Chamber of Commerce PAC would not get involved in primary elections in March, such as the Republican contest for county clerk or the three-way Democratic race in county board District 6. "I would anticipate no involvement in the primary," he said. "It's not that we don't find either of those important, but I just don't see the PAC getting involved in those." Coming soon, a park of their own. Families gift first step in new home for track and soccer. Illinois track and field has been without a truly permanent home for 30 years after one round of Memorial Stadium renovations in the late 1980s removed the track. Those programs have instead bounced around campus, the Arboretum for cross country and the Armory for indoor track and field, while sharing a facility on St. Mary's Road the past 20 years after women's soccer was added at Illinois. Wednesday's announcement of the plans for Demergen Park, that true home for both Illini soccer and track and field, is the culmination of something Athletic Director Josh Whitman said was essential 20 and 30 years respectively in the making. "We haven't had a facility that represents the support that we've had," said Illinois soccer coach Janet Rayfield. I've always known it, but I think with a step like this, the world knows that soccer and track and field, and to be honest, every sport on this campus, is important to this athletics department. To this athletics department, this is going to be a tangible, visible step in that direction. Construction of the two new soccer fields, one for practice, the other for competition, will be complete in time for the 2019 season. Demergen Park Stadium will be open for the 2021 track and field season. The total cost has been split into two parts, with $14 million needed for the soccer fields and stadium and $4 million for a complete track rebuild. The Demergen family of Decatur, who also donated for Illinois Indoor Golf Facility, provided a lead gift of $7 million. Demergen Park Stadium will be located between the new soccer fields and the renovated track. It will house team facilities for both sports, including locker rooms, meeting rooms, lounge, and study spaces, sports medicine and nutrition facilities, and coaches' offices. A permanent dual grandstand with sight lines for both soccer and track is also part of the plan, along with permanent restrooms and concessions facilities. The soccer and track upgrades will coincide with construction-wise with the $79.2 million Football Performance Center set to open in 2019. "I think it's about being efficient in the dollars we spend," Whitman said, "of addressing needs for two sports that include more than 100 student-athletes combined. We're always looking to take a single dollar and have as broad an impact as we can possibly can. We do have a number of other things in the pipeline. What we don't have the luxury of doing is sitting back and doing projects in sequence. We have to run parallel tracks. We have to tackle multiple projects at once in order to gain the ground we need to gain." Rayfield likened herself to a five-year-old on Christmas morning that opened the gift that they've been wanting for a decade. Mike Turk, named the coach of the combined Illinois men's and women's track and field and cross-country program a year ago, has been waiting even longer. Turk was one of those Illinois athletes competing on the track at Memorial Stadium. He was coached the past 12 years, bouncing from spot to spot on campus, with none of the support facilities close by or truly dedicated to his teams. "What we try to sell is the athlete's experience," Turk said. "What kind of experience do you have when you don't have a locker room? What kind of experience do you have when you have a shuttle back and forth and a couple of times a day for practice?" Both Rayfield and Turk said their new facilities that will make them neighbors instead of a shared tenants will be a recruiting boost. Turk wants to recruit to the overall experience student-athletes have at Illinois, but he knows aspects like facilities, travel, schedules, and even uniforms can sway a prospective recruit. "I'm tired of hearing kids say, 'We love what you're doing, we love what the program stands for,' but we just don't feel comfortable there." Turk said, "I want kids that come here for what we have to offer, which is a great school and a great experience, and a vision as developing them as people." Illinois sports, standing tall. Illini avoid another embarrassing loss to Governors. Barely. Forget about scoring in 7 seconds or less. Illinois was simply happy to score, period, Wednesday night as non-conference play restarted against Austin Peay. Or hang on to the ball. Illinois committed 25 turnovers, was whistled for 19 fouls, and while the Illini shot 40% from the field, they hit just 15% from three-point range. Sloppy enough play that Dick Vitale might have stood on his head anyway to replicate the bet he paid off after Austin Peay upset Illinois in the first round of the 1987 NCAA tournament. 30 years later, Illinois managed to avoid a similar upset this time around. In a game the Illini trailed more than led, their saving grace was an Austin Peay team that's just as prone to turnovers, fouls, and missed shots. That allowed the Illini to pull off a 64-57 come-from-behind victory in front of a sometimes stunned-into-silence crowd of 12,352 at State Farm Center. "We've got to learn from it," Illinois redshirt junior forward LaRon Black said, "and play tougher." The familiarity between Illinois coach Brad Underwood and Austin Peay coach Matt Figger, their time together at Kansas State and South Carolina, was something the Illini players knew. They knew they'd face a similar team in terms of aggressive style of play. "They run a lot of the same stuff that we do, offensively and defensively," Illinois redshirt junior forward Michael Finke said. "We knew there was going to be a lot of pressure. We've got to be stronger with the ball and not be as soft." That Illinois, 7-3, knew that was coming defensively from the Governors, 4-5, and the way Austin Peay ultimately played against the Illini didn't surprise Underwood. "We don't run it against ourselves for two hoots either," he said. "We play loser in practice against it. We're smart enough in practice to back cut and get open." There was a passiveness against Austin Peay. Underwood has said several times the Illini haven't progressed yet to a point in his offense where he can start scheming against what their opponents throw at them. Wednesday's game, the ineffectiveness on offense, wasn't a step in a direction that would allow more scheming. "I told our team I've led the country in assists," Underwood said. "I finished second once. You know, we're not executing very well on the offensive end when we have 9 assists. Champaign County jury verdict. Elder abuse suspect convicted. A Champaign man who denied touching an elderly woman with dementia at a Champaign care facility is headed to prison for as many as 60 years after a jury found that he molested her. A Champaign County jury took 3 hours to reject Dontrell Netter's assertions that he never crossed the threshold of the 90-year-old woman's room at Bickford Cottage, 1002 South Staley Road, in July 2015. The jury convicted Netter, 24, whose last known local address was in the 2300 block of Southmore Drive, of aggravated criminal sexual assault, attempted aggravated criminal sexual assault, and conspiracy to commit aggravated criminal sexual assault. Judge Tom DeFantis revoked Netter's bond and sent sentencing for January 18. The charges stemmed from a twisted scheme involving former Bickford employee Channing Butler of Champaign, now serving a 14-year prison sentence for his role in the abuse. Butler, 28, was a certified nurse assistant who invited Netter and other men to the facility to engage in sex acts with elderly women unable to defend themselves. Butler took photos of the activity. Butler and two other men pleaded guilty to various charges. All are serving prison sentences. Testifying for the state Tuesday, Butler changed the story that he gave to the police in December 2015 when the acts came to light. Butler testified that he had told Champaign Police Detective Andre Davis in 2015 that he got Netter to come to Bickford by posing as a woman on Facebook who was interested in having sex with Netter. He also told Davis that he and Netter had sex there before Netter entered the woman's room and molested her. But Butler also told the jury that he had lied to Davis and that Netter actually turned down his request to engage with the woman as Butler had suggested. Jurors saw a photo recovered from Butler's phone showing the woman engaged in a sex act with a man. Butler told the jury that he took the photo and that Netter was present in the room, but he wasn't certain if Netter was the man committing the act. A man's face is not visible on the picture. In closing arguments, Assistant State's Attorney Matt Bonick called the Butler a sick man who did a despicable thing. He argued that when Butler was caught in December 2015 and implicated Netter in the twisted scheme, he had no reason to embellish Netter's role or make acts that Netter had not actually engaged in. The prosecutor also called Netter's testimony of his own defense unreasonable. Netter told the jury that he went to Bickford on a night in July 2015 after exchanging messages via Facebook with a person named Taylor that he thought was a woman. That person, who turned out to be Butler, told Netter that he could have sex with Taylor or a woman like the age of like 50. Netter said he followed Taylor's directions to get to Bickford, and despite a large sign in front identifying it as an assisted living and memory care facility, he thought he was going to a person's home. Even after seeing handicapped parking spaces and a double set of doors, Netter said he entered the facility when Butler came to the door and waved him in. Netter said he had never seen Butler before. My first words were, "Where's the girl?" It felt like a setup. He, Butler, was hesitant, then told me, "I'm who you have been talking to." Then I said, "Where's the other woman?" I was feeling like I got tricked, but I held on to some hope there was some woman there. It was night and I was in the mood, Netter said. Netter said Butler took him to the woman's room, telling him as they arrived at her door, "I have a woman in this room. She's old. I want you to go have sex with her." But Netter said when he saw the elderly woman seated in a chair, he told Butler he was crazy and headed for the exit. He said Butler tried to persuade him to carry it out, but he testified he never got close to that woman. "I never crossed the threshold." Netter testified that Butler had to punch in a code in order for him to go out the door, and that he went to his car, smoked a cigarette, and considered calling police. He said he did not do that because he was on parole, was planning to leave the area soon anyway, and he thought he could just put the incident behind him. He also said he didn't believe that either he or Butler had committed any crime. Also testifying on Netter's behalf was his grandmother, who said she buys her grandson's clothing. She testified she did not recognize the clothing in the photo of the man engaged in the sex act with the elderly woman as anything she knew her grandson to wear. Netter's attorney, Mike McClellan, argued that the state had not proven beyond a reasonable doubt that Netter was involved in anything criminal inside Bickford Cottage. He maintained that his client had never met Butler before that night. He also urged the jury to believe what Butler said under oath on the stand and not what he told Davis in December 2015 about Netter's participation. A wild ride. Controversial owner to detractors. I want every passenger I can get. Local business owner Dennis Topin discovered again this week that when he leads with his chin, more than a few people will take a swing at him. They include University of Illinois bureaucrats, Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan, and even a U of I student senator who suggested that the passenger buses Topin operates should be banned from public streets around campus. His sin? He sent an email message to potential customers and listed reasons to use his Suburban Express bus service. One of them stated, "You won't feel like you're in China when you're on our buses." The comment was taken, not unreasonably, as an unflattering reference to the 6,000 Chinese students enrolled at the U of I. Thus was born another racial imbroglio that was drawn attention not just locally, but from the Chicago Tribune, the Cable News Network, and other national and international news outlets. Topin said a series of apologies, suggesting his remark was an attempt at humor gone wrong, but his supplicating words have been flatly rejected by some. That attitude is reflected in a wide-ranging subpoena issued by Madigan that suggests he discriminates against Chinese students. That's a charge he rejects, saying it was technologically impossible. "We serve every demographic out there, and I want every passenger I can get," Topin said. Further, Topin said, 99.99% of ticket sales are online, and our website does not have the ability to determine race. But that's the price Topin is paying for his case of foot-and-mouth disease. Not his first, and despite his pledge to change, may not even be his last. His problem is that he's a fish out of water, a bird who flies into the wind, socially awkward, and sometimes inclined to make big problems of small ones. "I've been told that I'm too rigid. I think there is an empirical evidence that there is some validity to that," he said. Even sitting down to explain himself Wednesday revved up his concerns about appearances. "Sometimes when I'm a little nervous, I tend to speak in grammatically correct sentences," he said, of the inevitable impression that he goes hand in hand with speaking off the cuff. But one thing is crystal clear. Topin said he regrets his hastily written, ill-conceived, flippant comment and wants Asian students to be my customers. "I can say there are no malicious intent. Maybe there was a point of poorly executed humor that wasn't humor," he said. Even with that acknowledgement, Topin can't help but reflect in a neutral way on the controversy. "A good story meets the melodramatic imperative, good versus evil. Although I'm not evil, I've created a melodrama that makes it easy for people to cast me as a villain," he said. The insightfulness analysis comes naturally. A 53-year-old native of Mount Prospect, he has bachelor's degrees in economics and finance from the U of I, a master's degree in transportation from Northwestern, and a master's in business administration from the University of Chicago. He said he intended to study law at the U of I, but his plans were derailed by intense business competition that consumed too much of his time. "I'm too old," he said. Topin started his business as a 19-year-old U of I undergraduate, a precocious move that grew from interest in old buses into a study of the transportation needs of the Chicago area U of I students. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette, Part 1, for Thursday, December 7th, 2017. Please stay tuned for Part 2.